It just makes sense. I'm now going to talk about cents, and I'm not talking about the coins you carry around in your pocket or purse or the coins you get in a cash transaction. I'm talking about the language we use, the different vehicles of communication. You may have heard there is visual, there is auditory, and there is kinesthetic. Visual is the highest vibration. It simply means that we see. Auditory is the second highest. That's our ears. That's what we hear. Kinesthetic is body awareness. We feel it in our body. And none of these are right and none is wrong. None is better. None is worse. It's just the way we are. It's the way we're wired. It's like being right-handed or left-handed. And it would be very unusual for an individual to be only kinesthetic or only auditory or only visual. We're all mixed modalities. We use them at different times, and often it's even situational. By the way, most people to the highest degree are visual. Most people see things. That means they take in information through their eyes. And please understand that if someone is visually oriented and you're talking to them through kinesthetic messages, you have cross-communication. They're not going to hear what you're saying, and you are not going to hear them. So you must talk in the same language. And how do you know whether someone is visual, auditory, or kinesthetic? Well, there are several ways. The easiest is to listen to their language. If someone says, "That looks good to me," or "I can see what you're talking about," that person's visual. If someone is auditory, they're going to use auditory language. "That sounds like a good deal," or "That sounds right to me," or even "I see what you're talking about." A kinesthetic person is body-centered, feeling-based. They're going to say something like, "That feels good," or "That feels right," or "It doesn't feel good to me." They don't need to see it. They don't need to see the details, the pictures. They have it in their body. They have a gut feeling. Your responsibility, your job as it would be, is to listen to what the other person says. Yes, that's using your auditory skills. Listen to their language. Once you know where they live, your responsibility to improve the level of communication is to match them. So if someone says, "Let me see the deal," versus "Tell me about it," or "Let me hear about it," that person is visual. You're going to say something like, "Let me show you what this looks like," or "Let's take a look at this." This is a person who wants to see numbers. They want to see things. They want to see it in writing. They want to see a picture, a schematic, or rendering. It is the highest vibration out there, at least in the communication sense, of course. And remember, none of these is better or worse. It's just the way people gather information. There is another way to know the language a person speaks, and that is watch their eyes. Classically, and please understand, remember, nothing is 100%. If their eyes go above midline, if they're looking up, it generally suggests they're visual, they're seeing things. And we'll make some fine distinctions about this in a moment, but suffice it to say, the moment their eyes go above midline, they're seeing or visualizing. If their eyes are generally horizontal, this person is auditory, they're listening, and it's easy to remember that. Where are the ears? They're in line, they're horizontal to the eyes. If their eyes go below midline, they are generally a kinesthetic. They're taking information in by feeling it in their body. So how do you find out? Well, you ask someone a question that requires a thought, and you watch their eyes. If their eyes go up, they're seeing the answer. If their eyes tend to stay horizontal, they're hearing the answer. If their eyes go down, they're feeling the answer. I want to make a fine distinction here. And this is not designed to make you an expert. This field is so vast. This information is just to give you enough so that you can understand how to sharpen your communication skills and strategies. So generally speaking, if someone's eyes go up left, and that's their left, remember, if their eyes go up left, the tendency is that they're recalling something. They're picking up visual cues and recalling it. If their eyes go up right, they're in the future, or they're making it up. Now, this may be a good thing, or it may not be a good thing. It depends on what you're asking. If you're asking them to imagine what it would be like if they're on vacation, or imagine what it would be like into their new home, and their eyes go upright, they're seeing themselves there. That's a good thing. On the other hand, if you're asking where they were last Tuesday at 10 o'clock at night, and they go upright, the odds are they're seeing it, they're making it up. That may not be such a good thing. Same thing with auditory, same thing with kinesthetic. Eyes left generally means recall, eyes right, and again remember this is their right, usually means future or fabrication depending on the nature of the question. So if you happen to be selling a home and you have determined the person buying the home is visually oriented, you're going to ask questions such as, can't you just see yourself coming into this home in the afternoon or the evening, coming into the living room and seeing what it looks like, seeing the kids playing in the corner, see the kids on the swing set in the backyard, see the faces of your friends when they see you in your new home, the joy that they're smiling for you. See the smile on your face when you see your new home. If you have determined your client is more of an auditory person, you might say something such as, imagine coming in and listening to the sounds of the home. Listen to the sounds of that incredible hi-fi system. You can hear the children playing. Listen to the sound of the log crackling in the fireplace. Can you hear the sound of your dog in the backyard? If you've determined the person is a kinesthetic, you might say something such as, I want you to feel what it's like coming into your home, pulling into your garage, and getting out of your car. You open the door. You walk into the home. You feel the plush carpet under your feet. You feel the sun streaming through the skylight. You feel the heat from the fireplace. And you let them be with that. You have matched them so they have the feel or the sound or the visual images of their new home. If you're selling a car and the person is visual, imagine what people think when they see you driving that car, the smile on their faces enjoying it for you. See yourself walking up to the car and you see it gleaming in the beautiful sunlight, and you look inside and you see the leather interior and the gorgeous dashboard. If it's an auditory person, just imagine the sounds of the car, the beautiful roar of that exhaust system, the magnificent sound of that hi-fi system. If the person is kinesthetic, imagine what it would feel like driving this car on the freeway with your hair blowing in the wind. Feel the shifting of the transmission. Feel that acceleration. So you are going to match whether the visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. And speaking of long flowing hair blowing in the wind, when I was living in San Diego, a friend of mine, a very attractive woman with blue eyes and long flowing blonde hair, had the desire to buy a little red two-seater convertible sports car. She related the story to me. She went to the showroom, the salesman greeted her and looked her up and down, and she felt like he wanted to make two sales that day. When she told him what she wanted to buy, he took her to the car, opened up the hood, and showed her the engine. She said, he told me all about the brake horsepower, the sophisticated engine, the fuel injection system, and the wonderful chrome plating. She thanked him. She left the showroom. She said to me, that guy had no connection with me. He had no clue who I am. She drove across town to another dealer. She walked in, was greeted by a salesman, and after a short discussion, he took her over to the car, and she continued the story. After he opened the car door for me, he said, please, have a seat. He rolled down the window and gently closed the door. He asked me to put my hands on the steering wheel. He then asked me to put my foot on the gas pedal, come off the gas, step on the clutch, put my right hand on the gear shift in the center console, and shift into first gear. He then said to me, imagine a warm, sunny day here in San Diego. You're driving along the beach with your long, beautiful hair flowing in the wind. Imagine the looks of the guys as they see you driving this car. Listen to the purring of that engine, the gentleness, the sound as you shift gears. Feel the power of the engine, the acceleration. She said, I looked up at him and asked, where do I sign? It was only after that she actually took the car out for a test drive, and yes, she did indeed buy it. This salesman, after listening to who this young lady was, covered all three senses. He had her visualize what it was like. He had the visual. He had her in the car feeling what it was like to drive the car, to shift it into gear. He had the kinesthetic. And he had her listening to the purring of the engine, the auditory. The more senses you cover, the better the probability of consummating the sale. It just makes sense. In our next segment, we'll talk about sound bites. Sound bites. Classically, the soundbite is a very short piece of speech, often taken from a longer speech or talk, that captures the essence of what was meant, or at least what was said. The media, both electronic and print, love soundbites. Soundbites are most often captured from politicians, business people, and even the person on the street when the news media is creating a story. Classic soundbites include, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, of course, or Houston, We've had a problem, said by James A. Lovell during the Apollo 13 mission. That probably qualifies as one of the greatest understatements. While these are classic sound bites, they're not the kind of sound bites I'm talking about here in this segment. These are just to give you examples of excellent sound bites. The use of sound bites as I'm bringing them into this section is to capture the words or the essence from the other person, from the person you're in communication with, negotiating with, or doing business with. An attorney I know was asked to write a proposal for a company. She went over the company's website. She devoured it. She discovered the mission, the vision, and the purpose of the CEO. She found out who he was, what he was about, and what he wanted to do with his company. In her proposal, she incorporated what she learned about him and, in essence, said it back to him, in some instances, using his exact words. It is my understanding that when he read the proposal, to say he was thrilled would be an understatement. The attorney was indeed asked to take on the project. We'll never know whether it was just one great proposal, which I'm certain it was, or the fact that when he read it, he saw that someone grasped who he was and where he wanted to go with his company. Capturing his essence and feeding it back to him in sound bites played a significant role in her securing the contract. Well, how can you use this? Hey, if you happen to be writing a proposal or a bid, you now have a wonderful example about how to do that. Find out as much as you can about the company, the person, or the team and incorporate it into your writing, into your language. Well, what if you're not writing a proposal, but you're in negotiation or conversation with someone? What then? Find their language, find specific words they use, find out what they're about, and during your conversation, use the same words, use the same expression, give back to them the same vision they've given to you. However, let it come from you, not as an echo of them, but as a mirror of them. If you're in negotiation, and this is a verbal phase at this point, and the other person or team lets you know they need the proposal by May 15th, later on in the conversation, you might simply say, I believe I can have this proposal to you by May 15th. They know you heard them. And the secret is, make it sound like an original thought, like it came from you in the first place. The other day, I was in conversation with someone who was raising capital to take his business to the next level. Early on in the conversation, he told me what his desire for the company was. While the conversation lasted only perhaps 5 minutes, near the end of the conversation, I repeated his words back to him. His eyes lit up. He knew I understood what he was doing and where he wanted to go with his company and his role in it. You see, most of us are so involved in what we are saying, we don't even recognize the words and expressions we use. However, when we hear them, boy, they sound familiar. Well, of course, they just came out of our mouth. So give it back to them. Make a habit of listening, not only to the context, but to the content, specifically to actual words and phrases the other person uses, and feed it back to them at an appropriate time. Very effective process. So remember, sound bites. In our next segment, we'll talk about always agreeing with people. Agree, agree, agree. In this segment, I'm going to discuss always making the other person right. Hey, this doesn't mean they're right, and it doesn't mean you're wrong. Although they may be right and you may be right, or both of you could be wrong. It doesn't matter. What we are going to do is avoid the polarity that gets set up when one person feels they absolutely must defend their posture. If someone were to say to you, you're wrong, and you're like most people, you're going to feel the need to dig your heels in and defend that you're right. Well, guess what? The other person is exactly the same way. And this doesn't lead to resolution. It leads to polarity and breakdown. And it doesn't matter whether it's personal, family, business, there is no need to be right. The ego is the only thing that needs to be right, and you feel good for a while. And if that is your desired outcome, to feel good, to feed the ego, well, that's okay as long as you understand that's not going to get where you want to be. See, most of the time, that's not really what you want. You'd like to have the peace, the resolution, the relationship. You know, you can be right or have the relationship. You can be right or have the business. You can be right or have the friendship. You can be right or get what it is you really want. The choice is yours. most of the time, being right isn't really what you're after. How do you let someone know they're right? You tell them, John, you're right. I absolutely understand how you see that. Now, this doesn't mean you see it the way they do. It simply means you see what they see and you understand what they say. The tension is gone. You have not made them wrong. You have acknowledged them and their perspective. In the previous segment, I talked about visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. To simplify things here, instead of repeating each of the different modalities, I'm simply going to use visual. And so it is through most of the system, by the way, because I'm highly visual. So, John, I understand how you see that. Hey, would it be okay to take a look at some other things? Or perhaps, may I show you some other things you may not have seen before? Or perhaps, would you be open to taking a look at a different perspective? It is a rare individual who's going to say, no, I'm so stuck. I'm not open to any other options. This is the way it is. There is no option. And, of course, that does indeed happen. Now, the language, of course, will be different, but that's the energy and the essence behind the words. If someone is so stuck, they're not open to seeing other perspectives, you know the conversation or negotiation is really at an impasse, and you have some options and decisions to make. And I'll discuss some of these options in other segments. Right now, we're going to make the assumption you're dealing with a rational person who is open to seeing other points of view. You might, for example, say, Ellen, I see exactly what you see in that. It looks like you've made these decisions based on the information you had at the time. You see, you've now totally acknowledged them, and then you ask them for permission to show them something new. Would it be okay if I show you some new information so you just may see something from a different perspective? Again, most reasonable people are going to say something like, certainly, let's take a look. If the person with whom you're in conversation or negotiation with is a student of mine and has awareness of this segment, and particularly this segment, and asks you to consider looking at something to get a different perspective, you too will say, sure, I'll be glad to look at additional information, and if I see something new, I might be willing to reconsider. You'll hear that phrase several times in this program, what I might be willing to do. It's a very powerful statement. It lets the other person know you're open to further This is a very powerful statement. It lets the other person know you're open to further exploration and you've committed to nothing. So in this example, you have acknowledged the other person or the team. You've told them you are open to seeing new information and you have still left yourself the option of changing nothing. This aspect of agreeing shows up in another way when people are in conversation. I became acutely aware of it the other day while participating in a conversation with two very high-level business people, two CEOs, and you'll hear this, unfortunately, much too often. One of the people said something, and the other person said, and he actually said it a few times, you're wrong, that's not what I said. Another time he said, you got it wrong. He also said, no, you don't understand what I'm telling you. Whoa! How does it feel to you? How do you feel if someone said that to you? Imagine how the person feels when you just call them an idiot because they don't get it. Making people wrong does not enhance rapport. They finally did get to the other side, and it was just massive confusion. And fortunately, neither of them was intransigent, and they were able to set aside differences and come to a common ground. It was a wonderful resolution. The other day, I was attempting to explain something to someone. I realized she wasn't getting it. I could have said something like, why don't you just get it? Or, this is so simple. What? Why don't you understand it? Or something else to make her wrong and make her feel like a fool. Yeah, I was getting frustrated. I took a deep breath and took responsibility for my inability to connect with her. I said something like, I'm having difficulty explaining this to you. And I tried again. I chunked down each individual component of what I was saying into its simplest part, and I took her through it step by step. After several false starts, she finally got it. So rather than make her wrong, I took responsibility for my part in not being able to explain it so she could get it. Was it frustrating? You bet. But it is your responsibility to say it or explain it or demonstrate it so the other person gets it. That's just another secret of empowering communication. It's 26 sheep. And there's another component here, and that's acknowledging and empowering people. You might be astonished at what people can do when you acknowledge them and empower them. Many years ago, it looked like I was going to be stranded at the Fort Lauderdale Airport in Florida, trying to get back to where I was then living, San Diego. There were severe weather systems across the country, and flight control was in total chaos, with many flights delayed and canceled. There was a well-dressed man standing in the front of the line, yelling and screaming and cursing at the woman behind the counter. He was apparently very impressed with how important he thought he was. It appeared he thought it was her fault the flights were delayed, and I could watch her dig in and say to herself, "No way I'm accommodating this character." Later in another segment, by the way, we'll address why it's important to always be nice. She was intransigent. She wasn't allowing him anything. His fury was growing more intense by the moment. After what seemed like an interminable length of time for those of us in earshot of this tirade, the guy finally turned around, found a seat, sat down, his face beat red, obviously very frustrated, angry, and also obviously not going anywhere. I soon found myself at the head of that same line with the same young lady. The first thing I did was acknowledge her for the way she handled the abusive tirade from that rude guy. And rude is an understatement. It was obvious she was really upset. How would you feel if someone was screaming and yelling and cursing at you, whether what happened was your responsibility or not? And especially when it's not. Especially when you have absolutely no control over the situation. Again, I acknowledged her for the way she handled the situation in a very professional manner, and I acknowledged her for not losing her temper and not yelling back at him. You could watch her shoulders come back and her head come back up, and she started breathing again. This woman's whole attitude and demeanor changed. And then I said, "I bet I have the same kind of request. It appears I may be stuck here. If there are a way, how could you get me to San Diego? How could we do that?" This simple inquiry, by its very nature, empowers people. If there were a way, how could we do that? Rather than insisting, I empowered her to make some new decisions. You know, she could have said there's no way. The entire system is shut down with flights canceled and delayed all across the nation. You know, I would have accepted that. However, she looked at me, kind of cocked her head to the side, smiled, and started tapping away in her keyboard. This went on for about 10 or 15 minutes with occasional feedback as to what she was seeing and what she was finding and what she wasn't finding. After about 15 minutes, she printed boarding passes for me. Now, it's true the flights weren't as short or direct as I would have desired, but within an hour after that, I was wheels up on a flight out of that airport, routed to various places around the country, but ultimately made it back to San Diego the same day. For all I know, by the time I got home, that guy was still sitting in the chair, face probably still beat red, frustrated and angry, because he was arrogant and he did not honor and acknowledge that young lady. Let them be right. That turns into a win for them, which often turns into a win for you. Of course, agreeing doesn't always mean a change of heart or a change of attitude. There may be no way. Again, every flight out of their airport may have been shut down, but this woman found a way. When you're in negotiation, when you're dealing with family, when you're dealing with anyone in business, and you let the person know you see their point of view, or you hear what they hear, or you feel what they feel, and you acknowledge them and their perspective, you will most often remove the polarity and the need for them to be right. And then, when you offer up new information, they just may be willing to see, hear, or feel something else. So remember, agree, agree, agree. In the next segment, I'm going to add another dimension, another component to agreeing with feel, felt, found. Feel, felt, found. This is really, as I said, a part of the previous segment about agreeing. It just adds a different dimension. This is a very powerful acknowledgement of the other person. When you say this, you have stepped over to their side. They know you understand. They know you feel what they feel, and at a core level, regardless of being visual, auditory, kinesthetic, feelings are really what matter. Once you are over there on their side, your next step is to reposition them to your side. How do you do that? You do that by letting them know that a lot of other people have been there, that is, on their side, and when they explored new information, they made a new decision. Most people want to do what most others do. Not everyone, of course. There are some mismatches who are going to be different. However, in the vast majority, if the masses are doing it, there must be some validity to it. There is a saying, people go where people go. If you're in a new town and you saw two similar-looking restaurants on the same block, and one had a line in front of it, and the other didn't have a line, as a matter of fact, it was empty, the odds are you're going to go to the restaurant with the line. Why? People go where people go. Well, okay, how do you do this in practicality? What do you say? Alan, I understand how you feel about that. Then you take them into the bigger pictures to the masses. I've worked with a lot of people who felt exactly the same way. And after they had this new information, here's what they found. Okay, let's make this real. And so as not to offend any computer users, I'm going to use this example on both sides. You'll understand in a moment. Alan, I understand how you feel about using the Windows-based operating system. I've worked with so many people who felt the same way, exactly the same way, that Windows is great. And when they discovered the Apple operating system, they found something new. They were really able to make a totally different decision, and these people found the Apple system much more user-friendly, and they bought an Apple. Feel, felt, found. Now, to ensure I don't insult the PC users, I use the same expression going in the other direction. Alan, I understand how you feel about using the Apple operating system. I've worked with so many people who felt the Apple was a superior system to the PC. And you know, when they really looked deeper into the Windows operating system, they found something totally different. And they understood why the vast majority of people use Windows. And they found it more suitable for them. Again, feel, felt, found. Now, is this PC correct? I don't know. Does PC stand for personal computer? I haven't a clue. So what we do here is totally connect with the other person by acknowledging how they feel, bringing them into the bigger picture of how many other people have had the same feeling, the same experience. They all felt the same way. And when they had this new information, they were able to make a new decision. They found a new solution, in this example, 180 degrees out of phase with their original one. So the essence, again, is I understand exactly how you feel. Total agreement. I've worked with so many people who have felt exactly the same way. Bigger picture. And what they found is repositioning. So remember, feel, felt, found. In the next segment, I'll discuss the ability to just walk away from any negotiation. Before we get to walking away, I want to tell you a story about a trip to Las Vegas and acknowledging people, not making them wrong, and offering options. I walked into the hotel where I had a reservation. I went up to the reservations desk. I was offered a room in the new tower or a suite in the old tower for the same price as the room in the new tower. That's a no-brainer. Of course, I elected the suite in the old tower. Well, old was an understatement. It was decrepit. And the commanding view of the third floor of the parking structure, well, it really left a lot to be desired and cemented my feeling that I was willing to sacrifice the suite and take a regular room. I returned to the front desk and told the front desk manager about the deplorable condition of the suite and the view. He smiled and he got it. He understood. And to make up for it, he put me in a suite in the new tower at the same price as the regular room. But wait, this gets better. When I got up to the room, the suite was really stunning. It was a Las Vegas suite. The commanding view of the strip was remarkable, and lo and behold, one of the air conditioners wasn't working. Once again, I returned to the front desk, and I managed to find the same manager. And remember, this is about being nice to people, and I'll cover more about this later on, about making them right. In this case, by not being obnoxious or angry. I could have ranted and raved and told him about how miserable the hotel rooms were and how efficient the maintenance was and management didn't really care. Well, that wouldn't get us anywhere. And how often do you hear such rants? Too often, I'm afraid. Remember the preceding guy in the airport? Well, I looked at him and his name tag said John. I said, John, I hate to bother you again, and I really appreciate you upgrading me to the suite in the new tower, and I hate to tell you this, but one of the air conditioners isn't working. Now, the truth be known, it really wasn't a big deal because the other air conditioner in the other end of the suite was keeping the entire suite at a very reasonable temperature. However, I like to practice negotiation, and this was just an opportunity to play. John was so apologetic. He said, well, I can do one of two things. I can move you to another suite, or I can give you that suite for the half price of what you're paying now. Now remember, I'm paying for a regular room and I have a suite. He asked, which would you prefer? Now he's offering me the option. I looked at him and told him I really didn't want to pack and unpack and move again. I accepted his offer for a suite at the half price of a regular room. So this goes back to agreeing with people, acknowledging them, honoring them. It's not his fault the air conditioner wasn't working. It wasn't his fault that the suite in the old tower was pretty ratty. And it's about being nice to people and how sweet it was to get a suite at half the cost of a regular room. Okay, in the next segment, which is on the next CD, you're going to know how and when to just walk away.